right, welcome back to episode 2 of Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop. Today, like last week, we'll be talking to Sean Kitchen out there in Harrisburg. Thanks for joining us, Sean.
Yep, it's great being back.
Excellent. And each week, basically what we're doing here is we're giving you a little peek about what's happening on the ground in Pennsylvania's capital, Harrisburg, what's coming up in terms of legislation that matters to working people and activists that are out there, and then a little peek behind the curtain, so to speak, about kind of life and times in Harrisburg and what's actually happening among the politicians and the lobbyists and people on the street there. So, Sean, so give us a little lowdown about some of the things you've been covering this past week.
Okay, so late last week, I wrote an article about some of the police issues that have been going on in Pennsylvania and some of the legislation that's been introduced to combat the Black Lives Matter movement and communities of color standing up to police violence and police abuses. Last year, there was a high-profile shooting in Philadelphia involving a police officer, and Commissioner Ramsey chose to release the officer's name within 3 days. That sparked outrage by the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police. Mm-hmm. And there was legislation introduced by Representative White to make it illegal for officers or for public officials to release the names of officers involved in shootings or use of force cases within 72 hours. They would have to wait until an official investigation has been concluded, mm-hmm. which can take a while. You know, if there's a high profile case, that police departments really don't want to get out to the public. You know, almost could promote like covering up crimes or covering up incidents.
No, exactly. You write in your piece quote, the ACLU of Pennsylvania believes that these bills are aimed at communities of colors for speaking out against police misconduct and is nothing more than, quote, petty political backlash by powerful people for the rise of Black Lives Matter. So talk us through a little bit about that, about ACLU's position on that and how they see the connection being about kind of going after groups like Black Lives Matter.
Well, specifically in Philadelphia, there was this high-profile incident. The name of the shooting, name of the victim, is not getting. It's not on the tip of my tongue, but this happened in the winter of 2014. Commissioner Ramsey decided to release the officer's name involved in the shooting, and this led to a lot of outrage in Northeast Philadelphia, which is where the person was shot. The victim was shot and killed by the police mm-hmm. officers. So the Long Crest area of Northeast Philadelphia, which is, it's changing demographically. It used to be a predominantly white neighborhood, but it's becoming more Black for some of the people up there to accept. And in that area, just around that area, State Representative Martina White represents that area. Mm-hmm. And that area, Northeast Philadelphia, going further out, is pretty much, that's where all the police officers live. You know, in Northeast Philadelphia, in the white part of the city. Mm-hmm. And she has heavy connections to the Philadelphia Fraternal Order of Police. They helped get her elected. Her election party was held at their lodge. And this is sort of something that happened in their backyard because a lot of African-American and a lot of Latino members of the community were really angry about the shooting that happened. And some of the confrontations got pretty heated between the public and the police department in the days and months following that shooting.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that you also mentioned in your piece that both Martina White and John Rafferty, people who have sponsored this legislation, are facing contested elections coming up. So you see this legislation that they're putting forward as an attempt to get some traction?
I think it's also a fundraising point, too, mm-hmm. you know, that they'll be at their backs for the police department. Senator Rafferty, who's from Bucks County, he's running for Attorney General, and he's pretty much the only Republican on the ticket. There is someone else running there. It's Kathleen Kane's former chief of staff or former spokesperson. He's running as a Republican, but he's not going to win. He doesn't have the name of recognition. And Rafferty will pretty much tie up the nomination on primary night for the Republican ticket. But his bill is similar to Martina White's, but it adds an enforcement mechanism. It will charge public officials or police captains with a second-degree misdemeanor for releasing their names to the public.
Man,
which is pretty out there.
So, what do you think the effect of that's going to be?
It's a silencing effect. One, you're allowing things to happen within police institutions without the public knowing. The two organizations against this are the ACLU and the Pennsylvania News Media Association. On the ACLU, we obviously know who they are, but the Pennsylvania News Media Association They're an organization, an industry group that represents editors and newsrooms across the state. And what they advocate for is open records, government transparency. And even though this doesn't have to do with open records laws, they still see this as an attack against freedom of the press and government transparency.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, you brought up the incidents with Ramsey releasing this one name, and it's almost like you're starting to see some splits within the ranks of the police, too, as well. About, you know, you have some officers who've come out, for example, in favor of body cameras and more transparency. And it seems that there's other organizations, other parts of the police force are looking to kind of lock things down and to kind of, raise that line of secrecy that much higher.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about it. I mean, these people, they don't like being criticized in public. They don't like people have pointing cameras at them. And since we've gotten cell phone cameras, we've seen more of these abuses come to light. And one of the things that the News Media Association touches on in their letters sent before Martina's white bill was voted in front of the House was what exactly is use of force. Mm-hmm. It could be using your car to run someone over. It can be using your car to stop someone who's on foot. It could be kicking someone in the face, using a taser, using pepper spray indiscriminately. And say if someone indiscriminately gets pepper sprayed, the officer's name would not be released until after the investigation. And what happens if nothing comes out of the investigation? My opinion, you know, I'm going on the record saying it, but my opinion is it would cause something that would happen in Chicago with Laquan McDonald getting shot.
Right. And it has to be in cases that are so egregious that it's so abundantly clear that this was a case of murder that the name would be released. So we have no way of publicly being able to identify patterns of, say, excessive use of force among police officers or particular police officers, I guess.
Exactly.
All right, cool. The other piece that I know you're working on some stuff coming up with minimum wage. They're attempted to push to raise the minimum wage in Pennsylvania a little bit. Talk us through that.
So the minimum wage has been an issue that's been supported. You know, we talked about this last week, what Governor Wolf has been doing. Mm-hmm. Again, this week there's going to be more minimum wage stuff on the docket. So once the legislators come back this week, pretty much budget season 2016 is underway. This is like the first quarter of the budget season. This is when we have all the fundraisers up and down for 2nd Street and off the other restaurants. And this is when the lobbying really starts going. Mm-hmm. Today is the 28th annual lobby day for the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lodging Association. They're having a press conference today. They're one of the main organizations holding back raising the minimum wage. And then the Raise the Wage Coalition will be holding a press conference before that on raising the wage to $10.10 an hour. So there's dueling press conferences going on inside the Capitol today, one at 12, the other one's at 1:30.
So let's talk a little bit about the push to raise the minimum wage. I mean, what kind of proposals are we looking at right now? I mean, do we have proposals for, you know, the $15 minimum wage? Are we looking at $12, $10? What seems
there are to be many, there are many bills inside the House and Senate right now. I think Patty Kim has a $15 an hour minimum wage. State Senator Dalen Leach has a $15 an hour minimum wage. And there's a $12 an hour minimum wage bill out there. 10-10 seems like to be the one that they're going for. Mm-hmm. The governor has asked for 10-15 an hour. I guess that's because of inflation increases over the past year when he called for a 10-10 an hour minimum wage increase. But there's also ones like Scott Wagner's that's an $8.75 with a $7 with minimum wage, training wage. And then you work your way up to $9. Or $9.50 an hour over a 2-year period.
Good. So has the governor been pushing this then directly in his budget proposal for the next year?
I guess so, because last week Governor Wolf was actually spotted with State Senator Dalen Leach, who was advocating for a $15 minimum wage in somewhere in southeastern PA. It seems like Governor Wolf is getting more vocal on this.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, listen, when we come back after a little break, we're going to get into some of the behind the scenes stuff out there in Harrisburg, particularly around some of the lobbying that takes place just on the everyday session days when legislators are getting ready to start their political work. There's a whole lot of work that happens before then. And maybe hear a little about what's going to be happening today in the Capitol or minimum wage. We'll be right back with Sean Kitchen. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1999. That was the day that Bruce Springsteen was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 2 years later, an article in Rolling Stone magazine read, "For nearly four decades, Bruce Springsteen has been a working class hero. A plain-spoken visionary and a sincere romantic whose insights into everyday life, especially in America's small-town heartland, have earned comparison to John Steinbeck and Woody Guthrie. At the core of Springsteen's music are the struggles of working people. Often his music connects to past lyricists and novelists and the history of the working class." His 1995 album, The Ghost of Tom Joad, opens with a song about the iconic hero from Steinbeck's classic, The Grapes of Wrath. In 2006, Springsteen released an album of covers of the folk music legend Pete Seeger. In perhaps his most well-known song, Born in the USA, Springsteen tells the story of a Vietnam vet struggling to find work. In another song, he hauntingly weaves a tale of the radical conflict that emerged when Vietnamese immigrant fishermen moved into Galveston Bay, Texas. Springsteen's songs chart the history of American work, from labor on the Erie Canal to the mighty steel forges of Youngstown, Ohio. His 2012 album Wrecking Ball captured the devastation caused by the Great Recession of 2008. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
All right, we're back with Sean Kitchen. This is Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop. And Sean, I understand today that you're up bright and early. What were you doing up bright and early? I mean, don't you got the day off today?
Yeah, I was up at 7 o'clock this morning, which is something that rarely ever happens on a day off for me. I went to get a picture of Jay Corman this morning, pretty much.
Jay Corman, and you're just a fan?
Yeah, I'm a huge fanboy of State Senator Corman, the majority leader.
I think I saw a poster in your apartment, right? Did you got that big wall-sized Jake Corman cutout?
Maybe. We don't talk about those things in public.
I thought we were doing behind the scenes.
We are. So basically, this morning I got up. I was out of my apartment by like 7:30 this morning. Grabbed a cup of coffee at Little Amps. I went inside the Hilton Hotel to scout around some of the things that were going on upstairs, because today was the lobbying day for the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lobbying Association.
Yeah, and for people that don't know or listening in, who haven't been to the Capitol, like the Hilton is like really literally just a few blocks from the actual Capitol building. So we're talking very, very close to the Capitol. So anyways,
this is where all the breakfasts are held, a lot of like conferences are held. You know, it's really interesting.
What do you mean breakfasts?
Lobby breakfast with people. Like, you know, you have breakfast with Jake Corman and go, you know, you have people from the Chamber and Manufacturers Association coming in, stuff like that. Like, so whenever there's session days in Harrisburg, usually you have fundraising breakfasts in the morning, then you have lobby luncheons in the afternoon, and then you have stuff at nighttime at the local bars, more fundraisers.
So you're basically talking about the stage is set at the beginning of a session day. So you've got the lobbyists that are basically giving the message pretty directly to all the politicians. You don't want to bite the hand that literally feeds you every day.
At 8 o'clock in the morning.
8 o'clock in the morning.
Like, it's one thing, you know, traveling out of my apartment at the end of the day to go to the bar, because, you know, Harrisburg's still lively. There's still people walking on the thing. It's really, like, eerie and odd walking down 2nd Street at, like, 7:30 in the morning with no cars along the street, no really little traffic, rush hour hasn't start yet. And then it just starts, like, filling in, with, like, the rats coming out of the hole, going into the different hotels and everything like that. So, you know, so I was, you know, standing outside of the Hilton for about 45 minutes to take a picture of State Senator Jake Corman walking into the hotel, just to start off the events with today's minimum wage stuff.
So this he was going into the one with the Restaurant Association.
Yes, he was going to the Restaurant and Lodging Association's breakfast to give legislative briefings on what's happening in the Senate and what's happening in the House. He was spotted with State Senator John Eichelberger, who is responsible for we talked about him last week with the media people.
Right.
But he's also the one that introduced paycheck protection in the Senate over the past couple sessions.
So we could see which side of their bread is buttered, basically, we're saying, and who's doing the buttering from these events.
Exactly. You know, I'm standing outside seeing all the usual faces from the Chamber of Business, the Manufacturers Association, your regular chiefs of staffs, all that good stuff going on. Like the lobbyists you see on a daily basis. You get to know them personally after a while.
Now, is Corbyn expected to introduce any legislation or anything like this today? Is minimum wage going to be on the floor in the discussions today?
No, but today, so basically what's going on today is it's not expected to be on the floor. It hasn't moved. It's been sitting in the Senate since last May. Hasn't even gotten a single committee vote yet. It had one hearing, and that's all it's gotten. But basically today is the 28th annual lobby day for the Pennsylvania Restaurant and Lobbying Association on the Hill. So they're going to be talking about tourism and industry. Well, before that, the Raise the Wage folks, they're going to be talking about waging. They're going to upstage them, hold a counter press conference at 12, an hour before that, to talk about raising the minimum wage.
So Raise the Wage Coalition, tell me a little bit about this group.
They're pushing for 10-10 an hour. It consists of local unions and organizations throughout the state. One of the groups that's sponsoring today's event is Rock Restaurant Opportunity Center United. The restaurant workers, I forget, I don't have their name right in front of them, but like
Restaurant Opportunity Centers. Yeah, these folks that we were talking to out in Harrisburg a couple weeks back for the Keystone Progressive Summit.
Yeah, so they're going to be out here. They're bringing about 15 of their own folks out here today. And then I think it's going to be like 30, 40 people at the most. So today's just like, you know, your dueling theater that goes on in the Capitol on a regular basis, which is pretty interesting to watch the back and forth going on. See who can grab the headlines from who.
So yeah, that's going to be interesting. So you've got the Raise the Wage folks are coming out first, and then you're going to have the restaurant people coming out basically saying, no, poverty wages is perfectly fine. Are they expected to actually address the minimum wage question at the second press conference, the lobbying group?
I'm not sure. I am not sure about that. I know like one of the issues that is really important to the lobbying association is keeping the tip minimum wage at $2.83 an hour. Mm-hmm. So it's like one of the things that they've been going against. They put out literature saying a raise in the minimum wage would especially hurt the hospitality industry, and it would mainly hurt, you know, single mothers. And they put this out in print. It would hurt like 18,000 women compared to 12,000 men. So they're trying to use this as a pay gap, a gender pay gap issue too. That raising the minimum wage would actually hurt more women than men. So you should just suck it up and keep it at $2.83 an hour.
This is, you know, the irony is just dripping in this thing, right? I mean, the fact that they're saying, you know, the hospitality industry, right? They require people to have like disposable income in order for them to survive, right? So their argument is, therefore, we want to make sure people's wages are low so they can't afford to come and support our industry. I mean, that's the most insane argument that I could hear over and over again, that these people come out with saying it's going to hurt these people. It's going to hurt the industry. No, it's not going to hurt the industry. It's actually going to put money in people's pockets so that they can go and spend it at your ridiculous restaurants. I mean, this is crazy.
Exactly.
This is the kind of stuff that just gets me worked up. So on the other side of that, you know, this is something that just bothers me, right? So you've got the Raise the Wage folks that are coming out, and they've got, you know, they're pushing for, you said, 10 an hour?
Yes.
Why in God's name are they not arguing for $15 an hour? That's what I don't get.
I don't know.
I mean, I think that's going to be something really interesting to see what we're going to get. You know, I think for too long,
I think the 10-10 an hour was an agreed upon was something that was agreed upon for all members of the coalition.
Yeah, that sounds to me like something that was agreed upon by some Democrats in a back room that say this is what we think we can get, as opposed to an activist agenda that would really say, look, we're going to go for the $15.
Well, I know, like, we've got to think about the people of this coalition, the Fight for 15 is also involved in this.
Exactly.
So, you know, they're the ones pushing for $15 an hour in these meetings. Who's pushing for 10-10 or something lower?
You got me. I mean, I really don't get it. There were some studies that were done a while back. They were looking at what the wage should be right now. If you roll it back to, I don't know, the 70s or whatever, when it was a fairly high, and you kept the pace of inflation. And there's some case to be made that that dollar amount, if it kept pace with inflation, was around like $12 an hour, right? This 10-10 thing seems like, okay, yeah, that's a huge, a significant boost to a lot of folks, right? But, you know, you got cities and municipalities around this country right now, in the state of New York, for example, they're already kind of ahead of the curve on this stuff. So it seems to be strange that this is kind of where we're got, you know, and I only say that this is not to knock the work of these folks. Like, I think they do phenomenal work. But, you know, I think that we're going to have to really start feeling our own oats and basically saying, you know what, 10-10 is just not enough, right? We're actually going to have to go for a sustainable family sustaining wage, right? Which $15 in my mind is like at the baseline on that. But, you know, what do I know?
You done?
Well, yeah, I'm done. Well, listen, and it took us right up to a break. So we're just about to take another break here. And this is Raging Chicken Radio's Out the Coop. We'll be back in just a few minutes to talk with Sean Kitchen about our good old pal, the Trumpster. All right, we'll be back in a few.
Hi. This is Kevin Mahoney, the editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. In just 5 short years, we've helped bring unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. I started Raging Chicken in the wake of assaults on working people, women, and all things public following sweeping right-wing electoral victories in 2010. Since then, we've done our best to hold those in power accountable and refuse to pull punches. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive citizen media site. Our goal now is to make Raging Chicken Press sustainable. That means raising enough money to actually pay our contributors and grow our operations. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. So I'm asking you to take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, you can help keep us going and support homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. For the price of a good beer or a cup of coffee once a month, you can make a huge difference. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member, leave a one-time donation, or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaires to fund our operations. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight.
All right, we're back. This is Raging Chicken Radio, and this is Out the Coop, and we're talking with Sean Kitchen today. So, Sean, I'm curious, what's your take on things going on with this election 2016? Pretty nuts.
Wow. Donald Trump, really? You know, I remember I thought he wasn't going to make it to like past December, past January, and here he's going to take it to the convention, and he might have a shot at becoming the nominee for the Republican Party.
Oh, I think he's going to win.
You think he's going to win?
Yeah, I think he's going to win outright.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things that actually just happened, it's kind of flying under the radar, is what happened in Pennsylvania. You know, mm-hmm. If you want to dilute the pool, the candidacy, right, and try to take this to the convention, you're going to need as many people inside the race as possible to split up the delegate votes in key parts of the country away from Trump, right?
If the game is a brokered convention, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a brokered convention. Well, one of the things that happened that might shoot that itself in the foot is – John Kasich is not going to be on the ballot in Pennsylvania now because he didn't get the enough signatures to get on the ballot for the
You're telling me Rust Belt Johnny is not going to be on the state that he's supposed to win.
Exactly. Right. One of the key important states. You know, this is like actually, you know, you looked at the polling that came out last month with mm-hmm. Franklin and Marshall. Trump was at 22%. Kasich and Rubio were at like Kasich, Rubio, and Cruz were all like 15, 17, 18%, mm-hmm. trailing right behind him. Now you just took Kasich out of the mix. He was at polling like second. And those votes are who going to go to who? Trump, most likely. You got to think about it. I mean, Kasich's running an anti-Trump campaign, but the people he's talking to are Rust Belters. I don't see Rust Belters going for a Rubio or a Cruz type of figure. You know, Cruz is an evangelical Christian and doesn't really speak to white working class people. and Rubio is, you know, a stiff.
No, I mean, you take Kasich out of the mix, and I think, you know, Pennsylvania goes Trump easy, especially.
I mean, and that's a high amount of delegates going to Trump in a winner take all state. You know, that might possibly be the state to push him over the edge.
Yeah.
And get him to that 50 plus one majority.
Crazy.
Or stuff. It could be one of the factors that gets him there.
Crazy. What else we got on the wingnut fringe?
Well, this guy Kasich, did I mention he was endorsed by Scarnati, Senator Joe Scarnati, who is the Senate pro tempore, pretty much like number one or two in charge of the Senate. So he came out in support of Kasich because of geography of Pennsylvania, how close it is to Ohio, and what he means to the Rust Belters, and guess what happened? Sorry, Joe. Not getting Kasich on the thing this time.
Yeah, I guess you actually have to have a political organization on the ground, and just your endorsement is actually not going to do it.
Yeah, and this is months after everyone in the House and Senate supported Rick Santorum for president.
Crazy.
So I wonder who they're going to jump to next.
Yeah, I know. And I hear that Toomey's been flapping his gums, too.
Who? Who's
Toomey.
This guy?
Toomey.
Toomey? Oh, yeah. Didn't he say something like he agreed with Trump that we're just a bunch of far-left agitators?
Yeah, what I'm looking at,
the Saul Alinskyites are coming back.
Yeah,
the same trope you hear every time the election comes around.
I thought this was crazy, right? That you had basically Toomey coming out, and he's basically saying the protesters at the Trump rallies are, quote, part of the culture of the far left, and they're potentially dangerous. And what I find remarkable about this with Toomey's comment, and I really can't tell. This is Toomey's attempt to spin what happened at the Trump rallies this past week or not, but you know, what we saw with the violence that erupted on Friday when Trump canceled his rally in Chicago, that was pretty incredible. And then you've got Trump openly coming out and threatening Bernie Sanders. I mean, when did you hear this kind of stuff? One presidential candidate threatening to send his people to Bernie Sanders rallies. And then over the weekend, I don't know if you saw this, but there was this crazy group that started and then stopped, right? But they were basically saying that we're going to start our own militia. And they call themselves, what was it, the Lion's Guard, and that they were going to go out and defend Trump supporters against
the far left.
And you got to
look at this way, right, with Pat Toomey. This is like his second major miscalculation over the past few months. You know, first he came out in support of not even voting, not even considering a vote on who the next Supreme Court justice nominee is going to be.
Right.
That hurt him in the polls. Now he came out and said, yeah, they're just a bunch of far leftists. You know, it's the culture of the far left. These people are dangerous. And this is why you have someone like Fetterman who is doing well in the Senate race. You pretty much, okay, so like, it's a foregone conclusion. Sestak's going to be the nominee, right, at this point. You know,
that's
the guy
what it looks like.
He hasn't spent money on a single TV ad, and it looks like he's going to win he's going to win the nomination. It's going to piss a lot of people off in D.C., you know, your establishment figures like Schumer and Harry Reid. Mm-hmm. But another thing is, look at Fetterman. Fetterman is polling right with McGinty, mm-hmm. which is either surprising on Fetterman's end, or you look at McGinty's like, what the hell is she doing?
Right, right.
I mean, she's not even running a campaign, and Fetterman's polling better than her when it's coming up against Toomey, which I find that to be ridiculous. I find it to be amazing, actually.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I'd love to see Fetterman do well in this, because they can build a whole different kind of movement here in Pennsylvania in terms of a political culture. Well, listen, we're just kind of running up to the wire here. So, Sean, I'm going to bid you see ya until we get together next week for Dragon Chicken Radio's Out the Coop. All right, we'll talk to you next week.
See you next week. Hopefully we survive.
You got it. Take care.